Carmilla, why do you always sit in the shade?
The sun is too bright for me. It hurts my eyes.
Then close them. It's glorious. You can feel the warmth penetrating. It's like life.
You talk such nonsense sometimes.
Now, few things represent the horror genre as well as monsters. Your Frankensteins, your werewolves, your vampires. These monsters represent our base selves, the parts of us we fear losing control over, the parts of us we find alluring and thrilling. They're how we use horror to understand what it means to be human. And so it seems fitting for this show to make sure to cover Carmilla, the first female vampire, and probably the first openly gay horror monster. She's endlessly fascinating and has colored not only how we view vampires, but women and queer folk in horror stories. So, what is Carmilla's effect on the horror genre? If you don't know about Carmilla, here's a little rundown. Her story was originally published as installments in The Dark Blue in 1871 by Joseph Sheridan Le Fanu, and they were eventually combined as a novella. It's all written from the point of view of Laura, a lonely 19-year-old woman living alone with her father in a castle in a forest in a remote part of Austria. Carmilla, a young woman about Laura's age, ends up, through a strange chain of events, staying with them. And, spoiler alert, Carmilla is a vampire, but kind of a special one. She falls in love with Laura, and over a period of time, they both develop an intense emotional bond. The story is unmistakably queer, even if Le Fanu tries to tamper down some of the steamier moments. But there's kissing, sex, and intense professions of love, all wrapped up in this gothic horror story setting. And of course, a monster, who's killing young women one by one. I read a version of Carmilla edited by Carmen Maria Machado, which I highly recommend for its additional contextual information, backstory, and annotations. In it, she includes a preface explaining that Carmilla and Laura were very likely real women, named Marcia and Veronica, respectively. And their affair was very likely fact rather than fiction. Veronica wrote letters that Le Fanu adapted, detailing her love and desire for Marcia. Can't say if Marcia was a vampire or not, but the original letters definitely depicted the sexual awakening and longing of a young woman and her parting from the one that she loved. Le Fanu's story is not explicit as Veronica's letters, and actually omits many of the overt romantic sentiments that Laura shares, oftentimes even translating her desire into disgust to create something more palatable for the time. So instead, we end up with a vampire tale with sapphic undertones, rather than just a story about two women in love. Carmilla is important to horror because she inspired tons of vampires and vampire content, including the vampire, Dracula. She was the prototype, not just for lesbian vampire content, but for all of it. While she wasn't the first vampire, poems and folklore about the monster existed prior to this, she was the first viral vampire story that bled into popular culture and established many of the tropes used today. From the fangs to the sensitivity to sunlight, Carmilla even includes an early version of Van Helsing in Baron Vordenburg, the vampire hunter who appears at the climax of the story. Adaptations of Carmilla are numerous. There are books, comics, films, music, plays, TV, even video games, anime, and a long-running web series. Carmilla is largely responsible for the entirety of the lesbian vampire trope. Most modern adaptations skew her much more toward the male gaze. As a super slinky seductress toward men, mostly, she's usually painted as a very sexual creature that relies on violence and her overt sexuality, rather than the original Carmilla, who relied on her gentle femininity and barely exhibited any real violence at all. It's not until recently that we've started to actually see more even and deep versions of Carmilla. The Netflix Castlevania animated series portrays her as a multidimensional character with goals, a personality, humor, and a multi-season character arc. The Carmilla web series and accompanying movie reimagine her for modern audiences and emphasize placing her in a healthy lesbian relationship rather than painting her as a villainous predator. But these representations of her are few and far between. Like so many women in horror, in literature even, Carmilla has been turned and twisted to meet what's popular and sexy and exciting, leaving few to really examine the depth of what lies beneath. While Carmilla has been manipulated throughout the years into something for the male gaze, behind all of that is something truly real and important. Which brings us back to Dracula. If Carmilla was the one-note murderess that many portrayals would have us believe, I don't think Bram Stoker would have taken to her as strongly as he did. While there's no hard and fast proof that Stoker read the Carmilla novella, there's plenty of evidence to suggest that he did, and that he borrowed quite a bit of her for his own work. Carmilla was published a good 25 years prior to Dracula's Guest, the short story that eventually became the Dracula novel. Originally, Dracula hailed from Styria, a state in the southeast of Austria, where Carmilla is from, not Transylvania. In the short story, a man takes shelter in a mausoleum during a storm and meets a female vampire who, arguably, resembles Carmilla. Coincidentally, Bram Stoker wrote theater reviews for a newspaper owned by Le Fanu, so we know they ran in the same circles. In a lot of ways, Stoker took the vampire story and improved on it. He fleshed it out, added more dynamic characters, and created a more sweeping epic, as opposed to the small tale that Carmilla was. But when I compare Carmilla and Dracula, I can't help but notice they each tend to demonstrate such interesting concepts about what it meant to be male or female in their time. Where Dracula has lofty ambitions of taking over the world and has a coven of women living in his basement, most likely an example of his desire to make more vampires like himself, Carmilla's goals are a little more basic. She's, ironically, not interested in reproducing, and it isn't known that she creates more vampires like herself. Instead, she has a reliable pattern that she uses for acquiring and leisurely feeding on her discerning choice of prey until they die. She kind of just wants to hang out with pretty girls in luxurious castles, feed, and be left alone. She uses her beauty and grace and charm to take advantage of men's chivalry, gaining her open invitation to their homes and their daughters. She develops emotionally significant relationships with her victims rather than just treating them as food. She falls in love with them and makes them fall in love with her, without use of magic or glamour. Not just feeding on them to survive, but feeding on their affection and their devotion. Instead of Dracula, who tries to make a companion out of Mina, Carmilla is happy to take Laura as she is without turning her. Carmilla set the stage for more vampires to follow in terms of her powers as well. Both Carmilla and Dracula follow the same set of rules, some of which existed from vampire's tales of old, some inventions of Le Fanu. For example, prior to Carmilla, there is no mention of vampires having particularly pointy or sharp teeth. Carmilla has needle-like teeth she uses for drinking blood. She can shapeshift into an enormous cat. She can move through walls and even teleport. She has to return to her tomb each night to sleep. She balks at displays of religion, and daylight is harmful to her. Some of her powers are more ambiguous. It's not clear whether she needs to be invited into a home to enter, and she seems to have a crew of people, not sure if humans or vampires, to help her exact her plans. She uses all these things to her advantage, and in most cases, uses them to avoid all-out violence, instead gently feeding on her victims as they sleep until they waste away to nothing. Interestingly, unlike Dracula, she doesn't seem to turn other vampires to join her. Maybe there's something about consent there? Horror is usually a vehicle we use to explain the things that scare us. It's why I find horror so interesting. It morphs and changes as society does. But so many of the core fears that appear in horror content tend to stay the same. The themes in Carmilla tell us a lot about what scared people in the late 1800s, and to some degree what scares people most about women now. The obvious gothic horror tropes present in the novella, the isolated castle, the ailing damsel, themes of dreams and nightmares, the evasive supernatural mystery affecting the main character, they all provide the entertainment that was popular at the time. But we also see sexual empowerment and independence experienced by women that was highly unusual for this time. Carmilla's true nature represented the anti-woman, Contrasted with the sheltered and devout Laura, Carmela was sexually motivated. She lied constantly. She hated religion. She used men rather than relied upon them. She was dangerous and sneaky and cunning. Horror can be used as a social commentary or lens by which we may access other perspectives. And Carmela is one of the first and most interesting examples of that. The queer community has long rallied behind Carmela as one of the first examples of queerness in popular horror. While it's unfortunate that the queer character of the tale is also the monster, it's also telling. It's much more likely that La Fanu was trying to disavow the lifestyle as evil and hedonistic, but modern viewers see in Laura and Carmela an otherness, a loneliness, a vulnerability, and a fierce sense of self and freedom that resonates deeply with the LGBTQ plus community. In years to come, this otherness, being made the freak or odd one out, the feeling of having to hide what you really are in order to conform and survive, has connected queer folk to horror in many ways. Even if it was meant to be a condemnation, it doesn't really matter, because queer women can see themselves in Laura and Carmela's isolation and desire. When I hold Carmela up to other examples of women in horror, I see her influence everywhere. Or perhaps women in horror just have these roles regardless of each other, because of the roles they have in our societies. Like so many other female characters in the genre, sex is at the forefront of Carmela's story. I mean, while La Fanu tampers much of it down, he basically describes an orgasm halfway through the story, so there's no mistaking what he was going for. We're meant to get that, and every other sentence about Carmela describes how disarmingly beautiful she is. She doesn't outright use violence, but she's more of a succubus, entering a girl's bedroom at night and crawling into bed with her. Doesn't really get sexier than that. Like so many women in horror, Carmela don't need no man, which is incredibly refreshing for Victorian literature. She has perhaps two conversations with Laura's father, and all of her other scenes directly involve Laura. Carmela's story speaks to the horror of women being lonely, controlled, and silenced. How women are often so defined by men, owned by them, and forced into both physical and emotional restrictions. Carmela shows us the horror and the thrill of being flung free from all of that. It's why I so enjoy many women in horror, because for the most part, protagonists or villains, they tend to intentionally fly in the face of what is normal or expected of them. It's why Carmela works so well set in Victorian times or even the antebellum South, like one of the many films that feature her. Where and whenever women are subjugated, the Carmelas of the world will find a way. Hysteria is hosted and created by me, Allie Nimmons. Find more episodes on your podcast player or at hysteriapod.com.